Well, good evening, everybody. How you doing? Mike Malloy here. Thanks for stopping at this spot on the dial. Glad you can make it tonight. We have, Clinton's all right, right? We heard that this afternoon. Like, oh my God, the way it was reported locally. I think it was local. Maybe it was MSNBC. Just, ooh. Matter of fact, Bob in Kentucky writes, Mike, you know, I'm glad that President Clinton is all right. I have a couple of stents myself. But is it necessary for MSNBC to spend at least 2 hours that I watched on this story? I hate to be a hard ass, but if the guy's going to be okay, I think they should move on to more important things that are happening in the world, like piece of crap jobs bill that the Senate came up with. I read the thing, and nowhere in it does it discuss creating jobs. Lots of stuff for the already rich, but nothing for an unemployed guy like me. I don't know why I continue to hope. Bob in Kentucky. Yeah. Wall-to-wall coverage, and I think right now there is an ongoing press conference by a lot of guys in white coats who are saying over and over and over again that he had a procedure that a million Americans get a year, and not to worry. And of course, the crack reporters who are standing out there asking the same dumbass questions over and over and over again. Good God. Oh, by the way, if you listen online, you know that sometimes you hear all kinds of things that you shouldn't hear. because our web streaming, we don't censor that. B, sometimes we have the streaming on and our mics open and it gets pretty hairy. And bless your little pee-picking hearts, you're always quick to say, I heard you say the F word or whatever. But you also, if you're listening on the web, you hear music that we stream. It's called, in the business, called incidental music. It's kind of music that you play that, is kind of like background. What we try to do with that music is make it interesting, whether it's Miles Davis or 13th century monks chanting, you know, whatever it is. Well, tonight, a guy who listens in Madison, Wisconsin, Sean Michael Dargan, sent us a CD that he and his musicians just put out. And that's what we're playing tonight. I know a lot of people send us a lot of music here to the program, and we really appreciate it. And sometimes we get a chance to play it. Well, we were so impressed with this CD that we got today. Just if you're listening online, that's who it is. Sean, S-E-A-N, Sean Michael Dargan, D-A-R-G-A-N. And he listens, what is it? What's his station there? 92.1, The Mic in Madison. He's got a website, and you can go check this guy out and his band. We were just real impressed. And so during the breaks, if you're listening online, you'll hear Sean Michael Dargan and the musicians who played with him to put this excellent CD together. And again, if you want to go to his website, it's SeanMichaelDargan.com. Sean is S-E-A-N, Michael Dargan, D-A-R-G-A-N, SeanMichaelDargan.com. Good music, Sean. Sand, not Sandy, Sand writes, Mike, there was a segment today on Democracy Now! About the Toyota recall. There were questions regarding the so-called revolving door policies between the company and the Transportation Department, which is supposed to address safety issues quickly. It appears that these recalls should have happened a while back. So with my Malloy Show brain, I ask myself, since Japan doesn't want any more U.S. bases in their country, has our government hit them back? Seems we always have some sort of blackmail for people or countries that disagree with our imperialism. Sand. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised, you know what I'm saying? Wouldn't be the least bit surprised. And then I get this from Paul. This is interesting. Mike, sitting in a breakfast restaurant this morning, I watched three older women whose bodies and the lines etched in their faces tell of a life of years of hard work. They were well past the point where they should still be on their feet between 6 a.m. and 2 p.m., yet they were still plugging away, I assume, trying to make ends meet or to support any appendages of themselves, you know, like children, grandchildren. Why else? I glanced at the TV above the dish rack, and what did I see? Fox News, a station owned by a former Australian, Glenn Beck raving about the assault on corporate America by communist, socialist, radicals, etc. The scenario was ludicrous. In this restaurant, of all places, with old women still working, serving coffee to people who were heading off to hard physical jobs and probably working for short money and no medical coverage. It was an example of how thorough the brainwashing of the American public has progressed. It's no longer possible to attempt to explain to some of these people that they're participating in their own demise by supporting the very people that they blindly listen to daily. They refuse to admit that the corporatists will use their last niece or nephew to fleece the country out of its last viable currency. These corporatists know that demographically, it's all over for them in 10 or 12 years, but that is all the time they need to gouge everything of any worth from the country. I used to be tongue-in-cheek about letting Sarah Palin become president, but now, looking at a population that does not have a clue, it might be the only way to eventually save some semblance of a society. I hate to say it, but it's going to have to get so bad, dangerous, and desperate before fear and anger will rekindle the spirit of a nation that has had its stones removed by corporate media broadcasting, Super Bowls, emasculating sitcoms, and portrayal of parents as morons. So, let's not only support Palin, let's push for Ann Coulter for vice president. Perhaps Jim DeMint for secretary of state. Sean Hannity and O'Reilly could battle it out for press secretary. And Glenn Beck, secretary of defense. Sound crazy? Maybe so. But what do we have now? Let's let the ankle biters, the obstructionists, the racists, and the paranoids have the ball, and then let's see what happens. Paul. Well, yeah, we've talked about that. If you want to roll the dice one last time, but it's like every side of those dice is a one. So no matter how you roll it with that kind of stuff, you're going to come up with snake eyes, pal. But I tend to agree with you. That's what we were talking about the other night. Sure, let these rat bastards have it. Let's see what John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, he's so cute, what they can do. Let's see what the right-wingers, maybe they'll bring back Dick Cheney, let him be Secretary of Defense again. I'm all for it. It might as well go down quickly so we can start back up again, rather than this slow water torture, this drip, 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 as our institutions are eroded, our constitution is eroded, sanity is eroded, television news becomes dreck, and people like, you know, the big four, Beck and Hannity and O'Reilly and Limbaugh, continue to eat the country alive. So you may be onto something, Paul. Let's let them have it and get the collapse over with. Quicker we can start rebuilding. But we got a story for you here. In Virginia, they have what they call the House of Delegates. They don't call it House of Representatives. They're still stuck in the 18th century. But it's called the House of Delegates in Virginia. And they just passed a bill that forbids companies from forcing their employees to be implanted with tracking devices. Yeah, a bill was passed that forbids companies from forcing their employees to be implanted with tracking devices. That's like saying, well, we're going to pass a bill that prevents the employees from decapitating people at lunch. But there's a twist to the story you might find interesting. Stay with us. I'll tell you about it when we come back.
it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Yeah, so the Virginia House of Delegates decided that time might come when corporate America would try to implant tracking devices, little chips, into their employees. Now, that's the cover story. That's what brought this bill, a concern that corporations might implant employees with tracking devices, little microchips. Based on that fear, a bill was written by a Virginia State delegate, Mark Cole. But that's not the whole, that's just the cover story. The real story is this guy is concerned that the chips will prove to be, as foretold in Revelation, the Antichrist's mark of the beast. Delegate Mark Cole's reason for proposing the law has as much to do with the book of Revelation as it does with concerns over privacy. Cole says himself that he's concerned that the implants will turn out to be the mark of the beast that'll be worn by Satan's minions. This is what he said. He's quoted in the Washington Post, quote, "My understanding, I'm not a theologian, but there's a prophecy in the Bible that says you'll have to receive a mark, or you can neither buy nor sell things in the end times. Some people think these computer chips might be that mark." Now, lest you think that Virginia State Representative or Delegate, as they call him, Virginia Mark Cole, is alone in his weird insanity, he's not. There's a website run by a Pastor Dan Corner called the Evangelical Outreach that states, quote, "With modern technology, it is very possible this mark, the mark of the beast, may be directly linked with a computer chip." Oh, man. And David Neff, editor of Christianity Today, says, quote, "This is part of a larger attempt to constantly read current history in the light of the symbolic language of the book of Revelation," end quote. Now, David Neff, he's quoted in the Post, obviously, is saying that the delegate in Virginia is a little bit crazy. Opponents of this measure in the Virginia House of Delegates argue that, quote, "It's a solution in search of a problem," end quote. Virginia Democratic delegate Bob Brink said, quote, "As I went door to door, there were a number of issues that never came up. I didn't hear anything about the danger of an asteroid striking the Earth or about the menace of forced implantation of microchips in humans." Oh, my God. Now, lest you think it's all crazy, there's a company in Florida, VeriChip, V-E-R-I chip, VeriChip, introduced an implant in 2001 that can store medical data. And the FDA approved the technology for use in humans in 2004. Well, there you go. There you go. You go. There. The mark of the beast. Isn't that the 666 thing? That was Ronald Wilson Reagan. 666. Did you know that? Ronald Wilson Reagan has come and gone. He was the Antichrist. And nobody paid any attention, so, you know, nothing happened. But there's your beast or your Antichrist. Wasn't it supposed to be the mark of the beast shall be 666? Well, Ronald Wilson Reagan. Do, 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 do. Crazy people. We are wall to wall in this country with crazy people. People like this Cole character. back in the day, would have been cast to the fringe. He would have been having meetings every Wednesday night in some little ramshackle 800-square-foot one-room church in the backwoods of Virginia, where they all handled snakes and drank lye and hoped that none of them died. Now, people like that get to run for vice president, or they wound up in the Virginia House of Delegates, or they have a program on Fox News Channel. What in the hell has happened? I mean, for real. Microchips, as bad as they are, Mr. Cole, for implantation purposes, if they're really bad, are not the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast, Mr. Cole, is this program.
Seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Got to share something with you here. Talk about how serious things are getting, where it concerns the crazy people getting closer and closer and closer to really and truly destroying this country as we've known it. Peter Montgomery, writing at Alternet, had this posted, yesterday. And what he's writing about, there is a Christian manifesto that's out there now for signatures that compares liberals to Nazis. And what Peter Montgomery writes about is religious right leaders are making a concerted push among themselves to gain thousands of new signatures for what they're calling the Manhattan Declaration. It's a manifesto released late last year, November, December, by about 150 conservative Christian leaders. Now, the document, which has been signed by religious right heavy hitters, neo-Nazis like Focus on the Family's James Dobson and Prison Fellowship Ministries leader and former felon Chuck Colson. And it compares, this Manhattan Declaration compares the advocacy of what is called, sadly so in this country, pro-choice, when really what it is a privacy aspect. Woman's right to privacy. But they call it pro-choice, and they say that pro-choice advocates are compared to eugenicists and implicitly to Nazis. I don't know how familiar you are with the term eugenics, but it was widely discussed in this country around the turn of the last century and beyond, and it was all about breeding out of the American stock. Imbeciles, morons, people with any sort of physical or mental aberration from what was perceived to be the norm. And Adolf Hitler borrowed this, you can make the argument anyway, borrowed this eugenics attitude where it concerned the master race. Anyway, so these Christians now are saying that if you are in favor of a woman's right to privacy, wherein she might, if she chooses to, have an abortion, that that is similar to the Nazis and their practice of their brand of eugenics. Don't ask me how they make this conclusion, but they do. They also say, these Christians in their Manhattan Declaration, that same-sex marriage is a gateway to legalized incest. Legalized incest. The authors of the Manhattan Declaration promise to defy any law that does not comport with their religious beliefs. Now, joining the religious rights, Protestant leaders are signatories to the declaration are four Roman Catholic bishops, including those who preside over and condemn whoever they choose to hell, the powerful Archdiocese of New York and Washington, D.C. The American Family Association, them again, oh my God, made the Manhattan Declaration the centerpiece of a January fundraising letter, and it urges members in this fundraising letter to sign the document. And in the letter, it warns of the grave threat from, quote, the anti-family, anti-religious radicals who control the White House and Congress. Anti-family, anti-religious. Barack Obama? Barack and Michelle Obama and their two children? You goddamn freaks. You really are. I would like to just beat the living hell out of all of you. I really would. I would love to do that. Just pound you into the dirt. What a bunch of half-wits. Focus on the Family posted a note on its Action Center on January 14th about this. Gotta stop them liberals, them queers, them abortionists, them freedom lovers. Gotta stop them. And several U.S. Catholic bishops, Cardinal Justin Regali of Philadelphia, Archbishop Donald Wuerl of Washington, D.C., Archbishop Timothy Dolan of New York, Archbishop Joseph Kurtz of Louisville, are urging their fellow bishops to preach about this declaration, get signatures from the terminally brain dead in their parishes, and use the document as an organizing vehicle. Organizing for what? Supporters of legal access to abortion, which remember, that's a woman's privacy issue, right? And supporters of physician-assisted termination of life from intractable pain, kind of like the hospice movement, up a notch. All those people are described in this manifesto as, quote, those who today assert a right to kill the unborn, the aged, and the disabled, end quote. The declaration goes on to link reproductive rights and death with dignity advocates to the murderous Nazi ideology of genetic purity. Here's a quote from the Manhattan Declaration, quote, eugenic notions, such as the doctrine of Leben sunwertes Leben, life unworthy of life, I know I mispronounced it, life unworthy of life, were first advanced in the 1920s by intellectuals in the elite salons of America and Europe, long buried in ignominy. How often do you see that word? After the horrors of the mid-20th century, they have returned from the grave. The only difference is that now the doctrine of the eugenicists are dressed up in the language of liberty, autonomy, and choice. Why, of course. That's the end of the quote. In other words, the declaration suggests that the only difference between Nazis and today's pro-choice and death with dignity advocates, the only difference is rhetorical. That they're just one and the same. They just have changed the words. Now, similar viciousness is directed at same-sex couples and those who support them. The declaration never mentions same-sex relationships without pairing them with all sorts of mixed-up relationships and incest. You know, the what was the guy with the dead baby that he would bring home, the former senator Rick Santorum, Kind of like that. I mean, the site says, or no, this is from an LGBT website, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered, about the declaration. It says, quote, evangelical Catholics, colon, gay marriage paves the way to incest, end quote. For the declaration's authors, the concept of civil union seems worthy of contempt. They write, quote, no one has a civil right to have a non-marital relationship treated as a marriage. That's kind of like what the Catholic, the Conference of Catholic Bishops say. It goes on, quote, we strongly oppose any legislative or judicial attempts, both at state and federal levels, to grant same-sex unions the equivalent status and rights of marriage by naming them marriage, civil unions, or by other means, end quote. Now, according to the Declaration, the Manhattan Declaration, marriage is creating a reproductive unit. That's what marriage is about. I don't know what that means. Does that mean that if two people who get married are the age of 60, they're beyond their ability to reproduce as a couple? Does that mean they should be killed? Should they be beheaded? Because they are entering into a union that is not about reproductive rights. And according to the Bible, according to Leviticus and some of the other the books that these crazy sons of bitches use as their rule book, when people violate the rule of God, you're supposed to kill them instantly. Take them out, even if it's your children. If your children sash you, kill them. Don't spank them. Don't put them in timeout. Kill the little bastards. Just kill them. Kill your daughters. Kill your sons. This is what the Christian fundamentalists who have put together the Manhattan Declaration, this is what they believe. Kill them. Kill your children. Kill your mama. Kill your daddy. Kill anybody who disagrees with what has been written. Including marriage. Because after all, wasn't Jesus' his first miracle, wasn't it? It was changing water to wine at a wedding ceremony. And from that, these crazy sons of bitches come to the conclusion. Of course, it doesn't say, it talks about a bride and a groom, I believe, in the biblical story, but it doesn't say if it's two men or two women. It just says bride and groom. And that's interpretation. I'm sure in the old Aramaic or Hebrew or Greek or whatever the hell language all this nonsense was written in. What if it would have said, and John and James were very happy that their marriage had been blessed by the Savior who turned water into wine. But see, they don't tell you that part. I bet it was. As a matter of fact, I bet it was a couple of gay guys who invited the disciples over and said, hey, come on over and let's, you know, hang out. The Manhattan Declaration that says you, gentle listener, if you're a liberal or progressive, you are a Nazi. You are trying to destroy God's kingdom here on earth, and they are going to get you.
It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. So it's called the Manhattan Declaration, where the Christian right in this country, Protestants, joined by some right-wing Orthodox, Christian Orthodox, and some Catholic bishops and archbishops, they're coming after us. They're coming after people who believe in a woman's right to privacy, people who believe in stem cell research, people who believe that everybody should be treated equal before the law, something about that in the Constitution, even where it concerns writing a contract together, even if they're of the same sex, all that stuff. We are the demons. We are Nazis. We are the Nazis. You sons of bitches. We are. James Dobson was on his radio show, and he was discussing this with Charles Colson and one of these other freaks. And Dobson stated that with the passage of hate crimes legislation, quote, it could get very costly to follow this Christ, meaning that pastors and Christians are about to come under direct attack from the government. Yeah, didn't you know that? To which Robert George responded that Christian martyrs have always been called on to pay the ultimate price rather than to deny the Lord or to do what is evil in his sight. End quote. So they're ready for martyrdom. Hey, let me help. Let me help. I will be happy to help. As a matter of fact, I just recently bought a new rifle, and I've been, you know, I've just been dying to try it out on something that has a pulse. And, you know, I don't want to shoot any of the deer that are wandering around out here in the snow. But, you know, if you guys want a martyrdom, I'll bet we could work something out, huh? The document repeats bogus claims about the new federal hate crimes law. And of course, it neglects to note that the laws has the explicit affirmation of First Amendment protections for free speech and religious liberty. See, they don't care. If a preacher wants to get up in church and say, you know, God damn the queers, that's fine. There's nothing in the hate crimes legislation that says that. But if the preacher says, God damn the queers, and one of his brain-dead parishioners goes outside after church and kills somebody, because he thinks that person's gay, and then says, I killed him because he's a goddamn queer, and the preacher said that too. You see how this works? Then that guy would have violated the law. It goes on to say, quote, in Canada and some European nations, Christian clergy have been prosecuted for preaching biblical norms against the practice of homosexuality. New hate crime laws in America raise the specter of the same practice here. End quote. Really? Really? Hey, Canadian listeners, have you guys and gals had some clergy up there prosecuted for preaching against homosexuality? Damn, I haven't heard about it. Oh, my God. I can't. Manhattan Declaration co-author, former prison dude Chuck Colson, said it was the most important document he has ever signed. Former presidential candidate Mike Huckabee said nothing of this significance has happened in his lifetime and gushed on his television show that Charles Colson, one of the authors, would be, quote, one of the great influence on history, end quote. The signers of this document have even compared themselves with every Christian hero from the early martyrs to Martin Luther King. Huckabee suggested that the document's historical importance equaled that of Martin Luther, who sparked the Reformation, of course, by nailing his 95 Theses to the door of the Castle Church in Wittenberg, Germany. James Dobson calls it a defining moment in America for the Christian Church. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. And it goes on here. There's more and more and more. Go to aldernet.org, and it's a lengthy article. Peter Montgomery is a senior fellow at People for the American Way Foundation. So it's at aldernet.org, and it is the Christian Manifesto that compares liberals to Nazis. And they are pushing for signatures. See, I don't know what they're going to do with the signatures. I mean, if they get 10 million signatures, what does that mean? What does that mean? And the thing about this that is so freakish to me, all the brain dead right wingers out here who don't know about this kind of stuff and who don't know that Blackwater is a favorite puppy of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. All the right wingers who, the rank and file right wingers, the dumbasses that think, Sarah Palin is, just hot as hell, hot for Jesus and hot for the Republican Party. What you people don't understand is that when the lights go out and the doors are slammed and the keys are turned, you're gonna be the ones to get it first. Don't you understand that? You're signing your own death warrants when you sign a piece of crap like the Manhattan Declaration. You're signing your own death warrant when you show up to listen to the hoe from Wasilla tell you, how's that changey thing coming? How's it? What was the rest of that, Kennedy? How's that changey Remember what she said? Oh, to hell with it. What was it? What was she said with that snotty kind of uber Christian attitude? Yeah, how's that changey something something working out for you? You know, that smarmy kind of attitude that so many of these right-wing, well, not so many, every single one of these right-wing religious freaks carries around like you and I carry a gun. How's that hopey-changey thing? Was it hopey-changey thing? Something like that. Snot. All right. Well, that was a fun first hour, wasn't it? If you don't come back after the breaks, I understand. But if you do come back, oh, my God, do we have something for you. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. This is the Malloy program. Welcome back. Again, if you're listening online, you're listening to Sean Michael Dargan band, new CD they've just come out with. Let me know what you think about it. All right, just send me a quick email. It says, "Hey, I like it," or "Hey, it sucks," or whatever. Sean Michael Dargan is a listener in Madison, Wisconsin, and I frankly think the music is pretty good. I like it. I like the lyrics. It's, you know, hard to get the lyrics, as it is with all contemporary music sometimes, but he sent us a lyric sheet, and it's really cool stuff. But I've gotten a couple of emails from people. Send me an email, let me know what you think about it. We might make this a regular feature, just occasional regular feature, with some of the CDs that people send in. Just send in because they want to share it. Nobody asks us to put this stuff on, and but I think we might do that. So let me know what you think. Sean Michael Dargan and his band are playing the on our internet stream tonight. And if you're listening via the internet, you can hear it. Gat, Mary in Memphis and several people have mentioned this, and I noticed it myself. The this jobs bill that has been put together that really doesn't have anything in it whatsoever, but the Democrats are touting this as a jobs bill. It also has a provision that extends the USA Patriot Act. Huh? You know, the USA Patriot Act that says you can be arrested and held without charge. USA Patriot Act that says your phones can be tapped, your mail can be opened, your email can be observed, everything you do can be monitored by the government without a warrant. What else does it say? They can deny you the right to a passport or the right to travel based on suspicion. You can be taken in and questioned if you made a contribution to any organization that may or may not have even the most remote connection to an organization that way down the food chain somebody in the State Department deems to be a terrorist organization. It just goes on and on and on. This is the Obama administration, not the Bush, the Obama. Now, also, if you've ever been to CNET website, that's a technology website, and they're reporting about President Obama supports tracking your moves by cell phone data. And it says, even though police are tapping into the locations of mobile phones thousands of times a year, the legal ground rules remain unclear. And federal privacy laws written a generation ago are ambiguous at best. On Friday, tomorrow, the first federal appeals court to consider the topic will hear oral arguments in a case that could establish new standards for locating wireless devices. Now, in the case, the Obama administration is arguing that warrantless tracking is permitted because Americans enjoy, quote, no reasonable expectation of privacy in their, or at least their cell phones, whereabouts. We do not enjoy a reasonable expectation of privacy where it concerns where our cell phones are. Well, okay, that's not written in the Constitution. Let me see. I doubt if Jefferson and Madison, the rest of the dudes, had any idea that there would be cell phones. Very good point there, Obama Justice Department. U.S. Department of Justice lawyers say that, quote, a customer's Fourth Amendment rights are not violated when the phone company reveals to the government its records, the phone company's records, that show where a mobile device placed and received calls. You get it there? Huh? If the phone company, you remember the telecoms, remember all that stuff? Huh? The telecoms want to reveal to the Justice Department their records, which can pinpoint where you were at any time. If your phone's on. If you turn it off, of course, that's a little bit different. But if your phone is on, whether you're making calls or not, is irrelevant. And the Obama Justice Department says, well, no, wait. That's okay. There's no reasonable expectation of privacy where it concerns your cell phone. Are you kidding? That's A. B. We're not breaking into somebody's records. We're not taking a look at Joe Schmo's phone records. What we're doing is telling the telecom companies, open up your books and let us see this. And the telecom companies are doing. Isn't that slick? God damn, that sounds like something right out of the brain of what's his name? John Yoo or Dick Cheney or Alberto Gonzalez, doesn't it? Huh? The claims that we don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy is alarming the ACLU and other civil liberties groups. They are opposing the Justice Department's request and plan to tell the U.S. Third Circuit Court of Appeals in Philly that Americans' privacy deserves more protection and judicial oversight than what the administration, not the Bush administration, but the Obama administration is proposing. Wow. Okay. In the jobs bill, an extension of the act that destroyed my rights and your rights as a citizen of the United States to a reasonable expectation of non-intrusion by our government. And a reasonable expectation that the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution were still in effect. That has been removed. It was removed by the right-wing crazy people in the Cheney, Bush, Gonzalez, Yoo configuration of right-wing neo-fascists. But it is being continued by the Obama administration. Huh? I don't know. You know, every once in a while, don't you have to just kind of pause and catch your breath? Don't you? When you see this stuff in the jobs bill, they have asked for from the Congress, and the Congress wrote the bill, an extension of the USA Patriot Act. Hmm? So what does that mean to you, Truth Seeker? Does it mean anything? Probably not. It really doesn't mean a damn thing to me. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, as some wag said. And let us not think that the order of succession from Bill Clinton to Dick Cheney to Barack Obama is going to alter the corruption of power. It's not happening. This is what so many Democrats or progressives anyway, or liberal Democrats, this is what we were counting on, right? Come on, Barack. Come on, Barry. Get in there. Become the president. Bring an end to the madness. But the madness is not ending. Now, I know a lot of Obama apologists are going to say, well, Mike, what can he do? You know, I mean, they took him in the back room and showed him the Zapruder film. Okay. Okay, and that may be true. And if it is true, let's use that as the starting point. But let us not continue to pretend like we are living with an administration in place that wants to restore civil liberties that were granted to white males 230 some years ago, and then expanded to include women, and then, my goodness, people who are not white. So here we are with an administration who should know better. An administration in place that is saying, now we're going to continue the policies of the Nazis that immediately preceded us. We're just going to continue it. And we're doing it because of, national security. We'll be right back. About Governor Mark Sanford after, hiking the Appalachian Trail, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, down there in Brazil with his girlfriend. He now is begging for the very stimulus money that he said would lead to slavery, right? Is this from Crooks and Liars? I think it is. John Amato. South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford waged a high-profile war against the economic stimulus package last spring, claiming that accepting the $700 million for which his state was eligible would, quote, lead to a thing called slavery, end quote. Even as his state's unemployment rate climbed above the national average, Sanford maintained his partisan and politically motivated refusal to take the funds. But yesterday, I think on Tuesday, Sanford flew to Washington to demand $300 million in stimulus money for education. That's according to the state newspaper in South Carolina. This is what it said. Quote, Sanford, who spent much of last year fighting parts of the Obama administration stimulus plan, now wants South Carolina to have a piece of the $4 billion in race to the top education money. Sanford met with Education Secretary Arne Duncan to learn more about a charter school program Duncan started in Chicago. Yada, yada, yada. Now, Sanford's trip did not appear on his official calendar, and it's especially hypocritical because the majority of stimulus money destined for South Carolina was to fund education and save thousands of teachers' jobs. But in March, last March, Sanford told Fox News piece of human waste, Glenn Beck, that taking the money would be akin to, quote, fiscal child abuse, end quote. Aren't these guys creative? Fiscal child abuse, is it? That's a lovely thought. Is it? What? Fiscal child abuse. Woohoo! Typical conservative behavior, though, you attack a Democratic initiative relentlessly, and then after you get your 15 minutes, change your mind because you know the media will never hold you accountable. Oh, they'll go after you about, you know, the woman you're boinking down in Brazil. And then, of course, your ex-wife will go on a book tour and media will give her all the attention in the world. But, you know, your fellow legislators back in South Carolina will talk a little bit about impeaching your ass, but they'll never do it. And media will never hold you accountable. Nobody's held accountable in this country unless you happen to go into a convenience store and steal a loaf of bread. Or if you are on the verge of starvation because a hurricane just ran through your city and you break into a supermarket and steal milk and cheese, by God, they will shoot you. Blackwater will shoot you. But accountability to the thugs on Wall Street that have ruined the country economically? I mean, they stuck the fork in it. It was Reagan and Pappy Bush and Clinton and Cheney and his thugs who really destroyed the country. But, you know, the banking industry took advantage of the destruction because it was done on their behalf and in their favor, and continue to take bonuses. These sons of bitches continue to take bonuses, millions and millions and millions of dollars in bonuses. And what did Obama say the other day, quoted by Bloomberg.com? Well, I think, you know, that's fine. I think it's great that they have bonuses. Man. And then the cynical Ho from Wasilla stands up there and says, how's that hopey changey thing working out for you? How's it working out for you, lady? You're making a fortune on it, aren't you? Huh? You've really found your niche. And the thing that's so funny, there is no way in holy hell in Palin's mind is she ever even considering a run for the presidency. She's just milking this cow for all she can get. What's that stuff, Kathy, that hand cream that the cow, yeah, utterly smooth. Is that what she puts on her hands? Udder, UDDERLY, utterly smooth, yes?
I used to love that product. I'm serious. I used to get it in a little fabric store, believe it or not, here in Atlanta. And let me just say this. It was my favorite hand cream until Helen Hollers.
That's right.
Helen Hollers. And
one of our advertisers.
Yes. And she sent me some salve, some sort of chocolate, hemp, something mint, and then a lemon balm. And I am telling you, it's not just because she's an advertiser. This stuff is like, screw night skin. I mean, this is the best stuff you've ever put on any part of your body ever. Ever. It smells great.
Don't we have something on our website for Helen Hollers?
Yeah.
People can click on that.
Just go read about it.
What's it called again?
Helen Hollers.
No, this stuff.
There's a chocolate mint salve. And then there's a lemon balm.
And you can put it on your hands, but you can also spread it on a cracker and eat it,
right? Oh, man, you want to eat it. It smells that good. I use the lemon cream, actually, on my face. It's great.
We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
She was hard for the money. So hard for it, honey. She was hard for the money. So you better treat her right. She was hard.
It's Mike Molloy.
25 before the hour. By the way, remember we talked about the single mother soldier who had to refuse to deploy to Afghanistan because she had no family. Hold on, let me turn the heater off here. We're having snow down here tonight. She had no family able to care for her young son, and she was facing court-martial. The Army said today that she will be discharged from the military instead of a court-martial. Specialist Alexis Hutchinson, an Army cook stationed at Hunter Army Airfield in Savannah, not far from here, was arrested in November after skipping her unit's deployment flight. Hutchinson, who's 21, says she couldn't leave her son because there was no one to take care of him. And the Army at the time, I guess, wanted her to lay the child on the tarmac and get on the goddamn plane. Well, she didn't do it. The Army filed criminal charges against her. But a general at neighboring Fort Stewart here in Georgia chose to settle the case by granting her an administrative discharge rather than try her in a military court. Now, that decision still carries some consequences for this woman. She's being demoted in rank to private. She'll lose benefits afforded to military service members and veterans. A spokesman for Fort Stewart said the Army had evidence that Ms. Hutchinson, regardless of her family situation, would have resisted deploying, quote, by any means, end quote. Really? Larson, the spokesman for Fort Stewart, said, quote, this case wasn't about a soldier having to choose between her duty to the nation and her family. There's evidence both from Private Hutchinson and her fellow soldiers to indicate she had no intention of deploying, end quote. Her attorney says that's a damn lie. Her attorney says, quote, she was willing to deploy, was ready to do that if her mother had not backed out of taking care of her child, end quote. Well, I'll tell you what, I don't believe the guy from Fort Stewart for a number of reasons. First of all, he's a military spokesman, and they lie through their teeth about everything. B, if this case were such that Specialist Hutchinson was just trying to weasel out of her agreement, the contract she signed, to go cook food for people who were going to kill and be killed, the Army would nail her ass to a cross before they would let her out. You know it as well as I do. So I don't believe you, Fort Stewart spokesperson, Mr. Larson, Kevin. Don't believe you, Kevin. Anyway, the woman is out. She's out of the military with a general discharge or administrative discharge, I guess they call it now, and will get no benefits, nothing, busted in rank from specialist to private, yada, 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 yada. Oh, and Blackwater, you and I paid for their whores and their strippers. Did you know that? They charge U.S. government unsealed court documents from a lawsuit about the security firm Blackwater Worldwide. Indicates they defrauded the government of various expenses, including the cost of an on-staff prostitute, strippers, alcohol, false and double billings, among other things. And this is run by fundamentalist Christians, right? Connected to the family that set up Amway. How about that? Blackwater changed its name to Xyz Services shortly after the shooting of 17 Iraqi civilians in September 2007, for which the case against him was dismissed on some sort of a legal technicality. Whores, not that there's anything wrong with that. Strippers, alcohol, false billings, double billings. They used a subsidiary company named Greystone Limited to screw the government out of millions and millions of dollars. Apparently, there's some indication here that $53 million that they know about. What a bunch of slime balls. And these, you know, these are people who push their Christianity right up your nose. They will tell you that they are fundamentalist Christians, and God decided that they should set up something called Blackwater. Jesus, God. The government of Iraq said today that Blackwater's ass is out, and hundreds of private security guards who have been ordered to leave within days because of the links to Blackwater can't appeal the order. That's according to Iraq's interior minister. The interior minister said, we decide whether foreign security companies stay or not, and they want them all out. God. good Christian men and women who are doing nothing but God's work, going over to kill the wogs, wound and butcher as many as they possibly can. So prostitutes, double billing, lying, liquor, drugs, alcohol. I said alcohol. This federal lawsuit filed by two former Blackwater employees, Brad and Mellon Davis, husband and wife team, says Blackwater also defrauded the government out of millions and millions of dollars. Remember what happened right after our shock and awe invasion and murder of God only knows, small g, how many civilians were butchered in Bush Cheney's shock and awe. But remember shortly after that when $5 billion just disappeared. It was sent over on in crates, billions and billions, hundreds of millions of dollars for graft and corruption and paying people off and so on and so forth. And it just $5 billion of it just disappeared. That war so far has cost between $1 and $2 trillion. And remember how the right-wing vermin in this country said, oh, not to worry, the war will pay for itself. Because George Herbert Walker Bush, remember, he got the coalition of the willing or whatever it was called, 30-some countries back then to chip in and pay for our death-dealing activity in Iraq. But Junior Bush couldn't get that. You know, Poland didn't have any money. They sent 13 soldiers, and I think Moldova sent a box of envelopes and some paper clips. But Jesus God. So here you go. There you go. Blackwater, the Kill a Gook for God organization. Get over there and slaughter the Muslims. If Richard the Lionhearted couldn't do it and the Children's Crusade couldn't do it, by God, we'll do it. Let me at them. We're Christians. We're going to kill those pagans. There's but one God and Allah's his name, my ass. I'll show you whose God is real. Where's that hooker? Where's the booze? I hate these people. I hate these people. I hate the hypocrisy. Strutting around, these lard-ass ex-soldiers strutting around with their automatic weapons and their sunglasses or wraparound sunglasses and their bulging biceps. You know, why don't you guys take a long walk on a short pier? You're such punks, just punks. Must be great fun to go someplace where nobody can tell you not to kill people, right? Must be great fun. I'm sure that's what every thug and gangster in this country ever thought. God damn, I love killing people. Yeehaw! And now you get to do it for fun, right? We live in a weird, weird place, Truth Seekers. Jimmy is in Burns, Wyoming, listening on Sirius. Hey. Hey, Jimmy!
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, you old, whatever the hell that magazine you wrote for there in Atlanta.
Which one? Great Speckled Bird?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Okay, my point tonight is, okay, we got a Senate that is controlled by some stupid rule. Okay, now, I think we just played a game back there called the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Okay, now, if I understand it right, the coaches have a red flag challenge.
Mm-hmm, right.
Okay, so why the hell doesn't the Senate leader why doesn't he push for a rule that says, okay, if you guys want a filibuster, you can only do it once a session. Okay, you're leader, you got a red flag, we got a red flag. You know, you can throw it, we can throw it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let's turn this into a level playing field.
Now, that would require Harry Reid, first of all, to exert his authority which he will never do. Secondly, it would require him to smack the living hell out of John Boehner and what's the other one, Mitch McConnell, and tell him to sit down and shut up, which he'll never do.
He's in the house.
Yeah, but they're all the same vermin. Just because one goes by Rep and one goes by Sen, you know, they're all in the same vermin. But Reid won't do that. Reid's not a leader. Reid is your typical pasty faced civic club follower. He's not a leader, and that's part of the problem. Neither is Pelosi. Neither of these two Democrats are leaders. You know, you look back on some of the great Democratic leaders, good God, they would get things done, and if members of their own party didn't like it, the Democratic leader of the Senate or the House would just take them back in the corner and say, this is what we're going to do, and if you don't like it, I'll throw your ass out on the street, and we'll hire somebody to come in and take your place. And things got done. I hear you, Jimmy. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in.
Working for something that I can't touch and sometimes can't even believe in.
Go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
10 before the hour. If you're listening online, isn't that some ass-kicking music? I like that one. Someday I Might Learn is the name of that cut. We're listening tonight to Sean Michael Dargan, who sent me a CD. Sean Michael Dargan Band, I guess. He's from Madison, Wisconsin. Listens to this program on the mic. And we've been playing his music, the incidental music, I believe is what they call it. We're playing the whole CD tonight. And if you're listening online, shoot me an email. Tell me what you think. And I'll send it on to the band. Seriously. I'd like to know what you think. We may do this occasionally. Relatively new artists who come up with a piece of work. They mail it in here. We'll play it and get some comments. Right? Sean Michael Dargan. You can go to his website, Sean, S-E-A-N, Michael Dargan. .com, D-A-R-G-A-M, SeanMichaelDargan.com. Check him out. David is in Little Canada, Minnesota. Is that right?
Hey, Mike. It's been a long time.
Yeah, well, but where's Little Canada, Minnesota?
Okay, it's right outside St. Paul. I remember I talked to you a long time ago. I called into your show a few times already. It's just a small suburb right outside St. Paul, Minnesota, the capital city.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Hi, David.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
Great to hear your show again.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to talk to you about something you mentioned earlier about justice. And I think one of the main reasons why justice is so screwed up in this country, first of all, really comes down to the point that that's how the ruling elite make it. But not even just that, but the media, the dominant paradigm, kind of frowns on poor people generally. For example, I'm glad you mentioned Blackwater. Blackwater, up until 2007, had over $1 billion in federal funding, since then probably more. Mm-hmm. But you know the whole beef about Acorn, right?
Oh, yeah.
Acorn getting federal funding.
Sure.
Now, here's what makes me laugh. You know how much Acorn actually got?
How much?
They got about $53 million in 15 years. That's less than $4 million a year.
Right, right.
Halliburton got $53 million a day in Iraq.
Right. Well, we don't talk about that. You're not supposed to talk about that. Come on, David.
Oh, well, I don't want to get you in trouble, Mike. My bad, man.
Right.
And then on top of that, you know Andrew Breitbart, right?
Oh, yeah. This freak who used to work for Drudge?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. He stood in defense of James O'Keefe.
Right.
Right, after what he did to Governor Landrieu.
Yeah, the
Governor Senator, I can't remember.
Yeah, the pimp. And the pimp movie.
Exactly.
Right.
The first thing he did, him and John Ziegler, I think you know John Ziegler too.
Right.
Palin's number one stalker.
Right.
They have this tendency when they go on MSNBC, the first thing they do, went to cover a conservative scandal, the first thing they do is yell at MSNBC about how it was covered.
Right.
And I remember Andrew Breitbart said, you guys convicted him. You convicted him on Twitter. And the first thing I thought was, did you just say this on national TV? Did you look at it? Because, Mike, you and I understand that it is hard to expunge a conviction from the steel-like, vault-like legal department of Twitter.
Right.
You know, once you go on Twitter, that's a wrap. That's a wrap
on
life.
That's it, right.
You know?
Yeah.
I can see Breitbart's legitimate grievance right there. Because if I went on Twitter, oh my goodness.
You're doomed.
I'm telling you, Antonin Scalia would have me just it'd be over.
In a New York minute.
So how we perceive justice really is how it comes down to.
Yeah.
I mean, no one sits here and worries about it. Today on Fox News, they said unemployment benefits is just a good way to get people to stop working. See, nobody worries about the moral fiber of corporations who get billions in subsidies. No one says, well, they're getting handouts, but poor people who are just trying to make it. By the way, that unemployment, some of it comes from Social Security, and the rest of it is like a percentage of your income.
Yeah.
But, you know, no one ever worries about the moral fiber. Oh, my God, what's it going to be like if GM gets a handout from the government? You know, oh, my God.
Well, now, wait. Just one thing. Unemployment, you probably know this, unemployment payments, those checks, they come from a fund that businesses have to pay into. That's not government money. Okay?
Right.
And
some of it also comes from your Social Security.
No.
Which...
No, no, unemployment comp does not. That's a state payment. It's not federal, but any corporation that does business in any state there, you have to pay into. Our little company here, Malloy Broadcasting, we have to pay into it. And there's only Kathy and me. And we've been talking about, I'm going to fire her so she can draw unemployment. And then she'll go ahead and just continue to work anyway, work for free, and we'll get that unemployment check. You see how that works?
Don't get yourself in trouble then, Mike.
No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that. But when, we did draw unemployment when we were, we got fired for, or not fired, but Air America, IE America went out of business, and Kathy was like 7 months pregnant, and we both went and applied for unemployment and got, we were on unemployment for like, 3 months. But that's strictly a fund set up by businesses. It's no Social Security money. So I'm not trying to, be a
smart. Oh, no, don't get me wrong. Hey, I'm open to being corrected if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I don't want to look stupid in the future saying something like that. And,
right.
Whatever. But even still, if you don't have unemployment, then what happens? And you end up having to steal or do something then they're going to call you a bum for stealing.
That's right.
So there's no winning with these conservatives.
No.
There's just no winning.
No, you cannot win. On the other hand, David, people like you and me who take all this stuff seriously ought to stop. We ought to stop taking it seriously. We ought to just say, look, what is, and go ahead and try to get the Republicans elected so that the whole country comes crashing down, then maybe we can start all over and do it right the next time. You understand what
I mean? Exactly, and not even just that, but you also know this as well as I do. The Federal Reserve raises interest rates so that companies can't borrow, so they can't expand. So even when we're at full employment, there's still about 10 to 12 million people who don't have jobs. They say we need a poor to have, there needs to be a poor class for the economy to run.
Sure.
If there needs to be a poor, then why do you disparage them?
Right.
Why do you talk badly about them if you need them?
Well, but that's supposed to be a secret. Capitalism demands that huge unemployed labor pool so that it keeps wages depressed, so that they can dip into that pool anytime they want to, corporate America, anytime they feel like, well, I think we ought to make another $100 million this quarter. Okay, well, let's hire some of the chumps, is the way it works. Hey, I got to leave there. Thanks, David. Good to hear from you, man. Take care, all right? We'll be back after the break. We'll take your phone call if you want to check in. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. See you in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. And something, oh yeah, here it is. Some pictures were published the other day. I think they appeared first on the ABC News website. Taken by a police helicopter as the attacks against the city of New York unfolded on September 11, 2001. Some aerial shots. It was the only aircraft allowed in the air. It was a New York City police helicopter, and there was a detective on board who took these photos. And they're awesome photos. As the detective said, they had flown up to see if they could find people on tops of the buildings. He said when they were making their passes, there was nobody. He said it was eerie. The only sound was the sound of the helicopter blades spinning and the police radios. There was no other sound. And he took pictures of the building eventually collapsing. I'm sure you've seen the pictures by now. That kind of ties in to the fact that all the money that was set aside, the ground zero, so-called ground zero money, for people who suffered, especially the first responders, people who suffered injury and are now dying of lung diseases because of what they breathed in, that this toxic, the crap that they breathed in. I'm not talking about the people who are being murdered by the Bush-Cheney administration because they ordered the EPA to say, oh, everything's fine now, you can go back in to residents and workers. Those people will just die agonizing deaths and nobody will pay any attention to it. This is more of the Bush legacy for this country, of course. But no, I'm talking about the compensation for toxic injuries. The New York Post reported today that defense firms hired by New York to fight defense attorneys who were hired by New York to fight against some 10,000 claims against the city of New York. Those attorneys have already raked in close to $200 million. And a further $75 million was spent on administrative expenses by the end of 2009. Lawyers for the workers who are still unpaid stand to reap 30 to 40% of all settlements or judgments based on their retainer agreements with the World Trade Center emergency responders. 30 to 40%. So, well, what's at stake here is a billion dollars in taxpayer funds. And as much as $3 billion in liability insurance coverage. And the only one making getting any money out of this, let me put it this way. The fund has only paid out a total of $320,000 to five workers with minor injuries. Meanwhile, the attorneys are raking in hundreds of millions of dollars. Son of a bitch, this makes me mad. NYPD detective John Walcott, who battled leukemia after working for months at Ground Zero and the Fresh Kills landfill where debris was shipped, he said, quote, how do you justify earning $275 million, which is what these law firms have earned, without a settlement or trial? End quote. It's this kind of stuff. What is up with New York City? You know, I like to go to New York City. Friends that live there, I love to hang out. But there are some of the worst predators on earth. Vicious, human-eating, flesh-eating sons of bitches who work in these law firms, who work in the financial services industries, who would devour their own children without batting an eye if somebody would, you know, drop $10 million on them. They don't care. They don't care. They would kill their mothers. They would, and of course, they're all Republicans. And Beck listeners, they would force people to jump out of tall buildings. They would execute anyone who walked across their path if the price was right. It's astonishing. And meanwhile, the people who really deserve compensation for what they're now dealing with because their jobs required them, aside from whatever convictions they might have had to do the right thing, their jobs required that they expose themselves to, they had no idea what. They just had to save people's lives. And then the workers who had to clean up the debris. It's unbelievable. So all that huge compensation fund that's been put together for not just the people who rushed into the buildings and managed to live to talk about it, but the people who were then charged with the process of cleaning up and who spent so much time in that area, at Ground Zero, breathing this horror, this atmosphere of just toxic substances. They're getting nothing. And the lawyers are raking in hundreds of millions of dollars. Doesn't that make you want to pick up a stick and just go kneecap somebody? It does me. I'm just too prone to violence. I'm sorry. I really am. Because I know that talk doesn't mean squat. It doesn't make any difference. It's just like in Congress. It's just like, at this beast hole of Fox News Channel. Nothing's going to change. So somebody ought to walk in to these situations with a huge club and just start swinging. I mean, what else are you going to do? Sit back and go, oh, well, that's really terrible. Nobody does anything. If a couple of heads were cracked, you know, a couple of these guys, that's one thing. You got to respect the mafia, right? I mean, some of what they did, it's just, you know, hey, you're doing the wrong thing, crunch. Oh, don't kill me again. Shut up, crunch. You know, it's just, you know, when all else fails, right? I mean, that's what the U.S. government does when all else fails. When these little dark skinned people won't give us their oil, we'll send in the military. We'll get the goddamn oil. We'll bomb them back into the Stone Age. Well, okay. Why don't we do that here? When the lawyers start ripping off workers, why don't we say, okay, lawyers, we're going to bomb your offices. Huh? Why not? When the Congress does stuff like write a 364-page so-called jobs bill with no jobs in it, but they sneak in the renewal of the USA Patriot Act, why don't you just take all these guys outside? It's winter and very snowy in D.C. Take them outside. Surround them with Blackwater people, make them strip, and then throw water balloons at them. All these members of Congress, and make them stand there. If you move, we will put bullet holes in you. So stand still and make them stand there with water balloons cascading down until they turn into ice sculptures. No, this is too far out there. Wouldn't work. Okay. Stephen is in Burbank, California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Stephen.
Yeah, hello, Mike.
Hey.
One of our world-famous luminaries called in last night, and I had a thought about tracking chips, but what David called and got me off on this track, he's one of us. One of us.
Yeah.
But anyway, this Tom Tomorrow cartoon is talking to Kathy about us, about how Cheney and Rove and Bush are really radical leftists, you know? They want to destroy the Republican Party.
Right, right.
And then time goes on, but back in 1980, it's Obama and I guess it's Rahm Emanuel and Michelle, and they're hardcore right-wingers.
Yeah.
And the cartoon continues on. And then at the last, it's what happened? You know, here's Cheney and Rove and right. Sarah Palin go, what happened? We gave them everything they wanted. We gave them an electoral landslide. We gave them everything, and they're just trying to destroy it, you know? So anyway, that's with that. But as to our luminary, the call.
Hey, hold on a second. I got to take a break. We'll come right back, Stephen. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Shake my body, throwing the red flags out of the blue.
host, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Past the hour. Back to Steve in the Burbank. All right, where were we?
Yeah, our luminary that made a comment, made a good analogy about the Harlem Globetrotters and what is the Nationals or something, basketball teams.
The Washington Generals.
Same thing, right.
Yeah.
Well, it goes to like bread and circus, you know, and
right.
It's like it's a three-ring circus. It's like a dog and a pony show, and it's like more circus and less bread. I mean, I can't compete with his analogy, but I try with what I have.
I hear you.
And so the tracking chips, you know, I had this thought, and I thought I'd mention it to Barbara, but, I would surmise that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, et al., the usual gang of criminals,
mm-hmm.
they already have those tracking chips implanted in them for the security. Like if they ever get picked up, like if they ever get nabbed or kidnapped or something, their security would know where they are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, go figure. You know, you had one and one, get two?
Yeah, no.
Sometimes.
No, one and one, you get three. No, I hear you. I hear you, Stephen. You're absolutely right. Thanks, pal. I got to move on here. Appreciate you checking in. We got time to do this? I think so. Yeah, from Prairie 2, cake, if not bread. Prairie 2 writes, our economic affairs correspondent, new unemployment claims for last week dropped by about 8%, and from the media coverage, you would think everything had changed overnight. It hasn't, of course, and these numbers are often revised later by a significant amount. It's more likely that states are having reporting problems from the snowstorms than there was any real change. The underlying causes of unemployment have not only not changed, but they continue to worsen. The Senate Finance Committee has released a draft of the Hiring Incentives to Restore Employment Act, or HIRE. With a name like that, you're reminded of bills from the Bush crime family era, like the Healthy Forests Initiative, the Clear Skies Initiative, and No Child Left Behind. This $80 billion monster is no different, as it's loaded up with tax cuts and few jobs. This should be no surprise with Senators Baucus and Grassley as co-sponsors. One is a wholly owned corporate Republican that passes himself off as a Democrat, and the other is a Christian Dominionist and member of the C Street family who passes himself off as a hard right Republican. Any benefit to the public in a bill these two would put their names on is just a fig leaf to conceal the corporate engorgement that Bob Dole had to take pills to achieve. The part of Britney Spears in the sad spot will be played by the middle class. The tax cuts are touted as a boon to small businesses and municipalities issuing construction bonds, but without fixing the real problem, this won't happen. Small business doesn't hire people to get a tax break. They hire because there's a market share to be had. Companies like Walmart already get huge tax breaks and will continue to grind small businesses into the ground. No tax break will help you if Walmart comes to your town and undercuts you until you're gone. Cities are going into a cash flow collapse and aren't likely to be issuing a lot of bonds either. Congress could roll back the Reagan tax cuts for the rich who would be buying the bonds. Then we could simply pay cash like they did in the good old days when all our neglected infrastructure was built. Instead of spending the $4 trillion it would take to fix all our infrastructure, they want to sell it off for pennies on the dollar. Then we can pay for it all again in usage fees plus a large profit for the same rich people who got the Reagan tax cuts. Makes sense if you're one of those rich people, except for the ever-diminishing returns from that sort of system. But they'll let us eat cake, if not bread. Prairie2.com. Hire, is that what they call the jobs bill? Hire, hiring incentives to restore employment. Hire. Yeah, it does sound like the Healthy Forests Initiative or the Clear Skies Initiative or No Child Left Behind. Oh, well. I do look around the political landscape, though, don't you? And I think, Jesus, God, I'm a jerk for ever having believed that something new was coming, right? Come on, admit it. And I'm not just talking about Obama. I'm talking about Pelosi and Reid, too. I mean, you know, you got to back up a couple of years, especially for Pelosi. I mean, she had the power to impeach the sons of bitches before they snuck off into the darkness. Of course, Cheney didn't sneak off. He knows he's home free. He understands these people. Bush didn't give a damn. Bush said, I just want to get out of here. Cheney, you know, Cheney knew that he was safe. He didn't have to worry about anything. All he had to do was start raking in the bucks. But it was Pelosi and then later Reid, and then Obama came on the scene, and everything's gone to hell. Strictly. In the meantime, the hard right, the religious creeped out fascistic right in this country, you know, the ones that want to nail everybody to a cross and then stand back and say, does it hurt? Does it hurt? Well, Jesus suffered. Does it hurt? I mean, they are in the ascendancy. When you have a country that can produce a Sarah Palin, where 46% of the population takes her seriously, you know that you're in a world of hurt. Not to mention the insanity. So, I don't know. Oh, well. We'll be back after the break.
That we live in when no one gives a damn about
life's
the future
too short
of children.
To listen to right wing radio. Here's Mike Malone.
Expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Because I don't understand, but what kind of a man
25 before the hour. Mike is in Monterey, California, listening on XM. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
I just want to call in, talk about the female soldier you talked about earlier who,
yeah,
I've been discharged.
Right.
I'm actually in the Army. Up until 6 months ago, I was a company commander, so I kind of dealt with this issue.
Right.
The rule is every single soldier who has got sole custody of a child or family in which both the father and mother are both military are required to have what's called a family care plan.
Uh-huh.
Which is basically your contingency if you get called on to be deployed, who's going to take care of your child.
Right.
And that includes the soldier's plan. And then a statement from the person that they said would take care of the child, their brother or mother,
mm-hmm.
Acknowledging that, yes, they agree that they're going to take care of this child.
Right.
It sounds like this woman had that and that her mother backed out on it after making the agreement, is my understanding.
Right.
The standard condition, though, is you have basically 6 weeks to sort that out. And if you don't sort that out within 6 weeks, that you do get discharged. And that happens to everyone across the board. That's the standard policy.
Why the threat then from her base commander that they were going to court-martial her after she got to Afghanistan?
That I don't know. I mean, I imagine that goes to, in this specific case, what they're alleging, that there were other indicators. I don't know about that. I'm just saying, in general, the standard is an administrative discharge.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds like, I don't know if it was overzealous at a junior level, and when it got to that level of review, they said, "Wait, this is just a standard case." I don't know.
Can you speculate or just guess what the reference is about other issues other than the child that you know, this woman was not a combat soldier. She was support. She was a cook. And, you know, the idea that, you know, maybe she didn't want to be and I realize Afghanistan, everybody is in combat, but you know what I'm saying? What would you guess would have been the reason, if there are other reasons, that she would say, no, I'm not going to deploy?
I don't know about that. I would make a guess. A lot of the things that fall into the UCMJ are hard to actually prove as far as, you know, empirical evidence. and they go off and off of sworn statements from other soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
So she made statements saying, I don't care what excuse I have to make, I'm not going. That could be the type of evidence they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I could say that normally, you know, deployment orders will come for units as a whole,
right.
Not for the most part, not for individual subs or soldiers. Sometimes if there's an individual skill that they require,
right.
Then it will be, hey, you, Smith, you're going.
Mm-hmm.
But as a general rule, for example, I was a support company commander. I had cooks with me,
mm-hmm.
and the whole battalion got told to pick up and move.
Mm-hmm.
So while, yeah, they're probably doing okay without her, it goes to the good order and discipline. They wanted to say no one person can make this determination on their own.
Right.
The unit as a whole is going, everybody's going.
Right.
So like I said, I don't know the specifics of this case any more than what I've read in the open source media.
So in your opinion, then, the way it could have been handled a lot differently, if the rules are already out there, it could have been handled differently and avoided what appeared to be a real black eye, for at least, if not for the Army, certainly for the base commander over here at in Georgia where this occurred. And it just, you know, sometimes you got to wonder who makes a decision to let something like this go public if the rules are already there. That's
well, and one of the things that there's, for example, as a company commander, which normally that's a company's commanded by a captain,
mm-hmm.
who will be anywhere between, you know, 28, 30 years old.
Right.
They have a pretty good deal of leeway on how they want to deal with the discipline of their soldiers. And now the good news is, while, you know, normally those guys take the time to do the review, if they don't, there's some kind of backstop that it can be reviewed by upper officers, which is how it would have ended at the base commander's desk.
Mm-hmm.
The family care plan that I originally talked about, it's incumbent upon that company commander to review those. He's supposed to make sure those are valid.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that this company commander initially, you know, wanted to bring some kind of charges, and then it turned out he hadn't done his job. And that's why there's that review process that, yes, it probably initially looked like something may have been done, but 9 times out of 10 when it comes to something like this,
mm-hmm.
Honestly, the Army does not fall back on some kind of punishment. They just let the soldier go.
Yeah, and I think for everyone concerned in this, even though now with this administrative discharge, she forfeits whatever benefits that might have accrued had she completed her contract, but at least it's over. And
correct.
And I think in a situation like this, the only solution is the one that the Army apparently had already provided for, and that is the rule that you know, if a family is in a situation like this, there's no deployment to begin with. I just wish it could have been handled differently. It sure made everybody look bad in this situation. Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate the explanation, okay?
Sure. All right. Thanks.
All right, sir. Take care. Thank you. But isn't that true? Not just military, but corporate America, boy, in a lot of instances, nonprofit America, wherever you look, wherever there's organization, wherever there's structure, there's always a couple of people inside the organization who are going to screw it up no matter what, right? Right? Leonard is in Glendale, California. Hey, Leonard.
Hi, Mike. I'm a podcast listener. I wanted to...
Yay!
Somebody's talking about unemployment. I want to inform you how the corporation took over unemployment insurance. I worked in the Catskill Hotel for 30 years in the show band, and in the 80s, business was good. Eventually, into the 90s, we'd get laid off, and you had to call in on Sunday, say how many days you worked, and they sent you a check.
Mm-hmm.
Then, all of a sudden, they switched over to a Chase credit card or whatever it was.
Right.
So you had to go to the ATM, and you know, and you could only get increments of $20. So you got your money out, but there were always maybe $15 or $18 left over,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted you to use it as a credit card. Now to me, that's a corporation. I'm sure they made some other money on it, and it was really a drag.
I read something, I don't know, not too long ago about, these banks getting involved in the kind of payments that you're talking about. And the immediate question is, why? I mean, why not just do it,
Yeah, it was so easy to call in, and then they sent you a check, and you could get your full amount. But this way, you can only get increments of $20. So there was always maybe like $8 or $15 left in there, and I think they wanted you to use it as a credit card.
Yeah, well,
when you're getting unemployment, you're out of work anyway.
Right. Anything to make unemployed people feel even worse, right?
Right. It's really terrible. Thanks a lot.
All right, Leonard. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. There's something really, really evil. I don't use the word evil too much. Only in reference to Dick Cheney, pretty much. But there's something evil about a system that is set up and set up for the good of the community. The community being all of us that live here. And the system sets up little fail-safe mechanisms so that people don't fall through the cracks and wind up on the street or go to crime or go to drugs or what have you. I mean, that's the idea, right? This idea that people are looking for a free ride, that's hog snot. Nobody, okay, what, with 320 million of us, I guess maybe, yeah, I'll bet you could find some people who are looking for a free ride, but they're in the, they're way in the minority. Given a chance to work, people will work. Given a chance to, you know, to get something going where folks can make money, entrepreneur, start a business, do whatever. People do that, right? We just do. I mean, that's a driving force. I'm not big on this corporate capitalism. I think it really sucks because it's so destructive. But, you know, I like that Jeffersonian idea, the small farm, the small business, the entrepreneur, people who set up their own business. I grew up in a neighborhood like that. Everybody, it just seemed like all the kids in my neighborhood, the parents had a business, a sewing shop or a little grocery store or a greengrocer's or a variety store, a candy store or blah, 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 whatever. But God forbid you fall out of that safety net. Because the people who administer it sometimes, from the people at the top all the way down to the people that you got to confront and fill out the forms, they really do treat you like something that they'd like to scrape off their shoe. The demeaning part of it. A lot of folks who are in the so-called middle class in this country, I've been reading article after article scattered around the web, people who have never applied for food stamps, never applied for public assistance of any sort. Now, all of a sudden, slammed into that situation because of where the economy is and how horrifying it is to them, you know, people who always worked, who always strived to do the best for their family, and because the situation's way beyond their control, all of a sudden they've got to go to the office, they got to go to the unemployment, they got to go to the food stamp place. You talk about PTSD. Our crew, whose names we haven't mentioned for a while, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and of course Kathy Bay, who is the executive producer and the program's engineer. And also thanks to Sean Michael Dargan Band for the online music tonight. We appreciate it. I like your CD, guys. Chris is in Mimino, Canada. Is that right? Mimino?
Nanaimo, Mike.
How do you say it?
Nanaimo.
Nanaimo. We're not even close here. All right. Where's Nanaimo?
Okay. On Vancouver Island, about halfway down off the west coast of British Columbia, Canada.
Oh, man. That's I've seen pictures of Vancouver Island as well as Vancouver, and it's beautiful there.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you live
on much to be said about it.
But don't you live on an earthquake fault line?
Yeah, we had an earthquake about a month ago, 6 point something up near Queen Charlotte Islands. Basically, they're the islands of rain. I've never actually heard of sunlight reaching the cloud layer there.
Really?
A pleasant place, earthquakes and rain.
Yeah. Well, that's not what you really called.
No, regarding a caller, I think he was Ron, about a week ago, called in saying conscientious objectors from your army coming north to Canada, getting possible egress into Canada by some law that was going to be passed, but Parliament's been prorogued. You're saying that he was going on, he didn't know about the army's policy regarding deployments. You have to accept deployment, one, and two, you have to volunteer for it. You can volunteer and then just decline, but you don't get promoted. So in the Army, anyone in the Army can just say, I don't want to go out of Canada. They can't force you.
Obviously, you're talking about the Canadian Army. So, of course, the Canadian Army has no problem with gays or lesbians signing up either, right?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Yeah. So once you join the Canadian Army, if they say, okay, your unit is going to Afghanistan, you can say, I don't think so.
You actually have to volunteer. Your unit is permanently stationed somewhere in Canada, say Nanaimo. There's an artillery unit here.
Mm-hmm.
And people volunteer from the artillery unit to be deployed. And it may be under the banner of another unit, say one from Quebec, another artillery unit that is whose commanders are going.
Right.
And you're reorganized in the field to temporarily under someone else's banner. Or maybe you're there under, if there's enough people from your own unit, they organize you as a simple platoon or something under another company's banner, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, it's just reorganizing of the ranks. It's done all the time.
Well,
it's
that's not as complicated or complex if you are not involved in a global imperialism like we are. See, we can't... I realize that there are Canadian corporations that are just as predatory as some of America's corporations, but Canada as a
whole. Yes, we've got our skeletons.
Canada as a whole, you're not leading an assault, or occupation against other countries in order to steal their natural resources. So I guess it's a little bit easier dealing with the, your military and those kinds of situations where individual, decisions still matter or can matter. Whereas in a country like ours, where we're hell-bent on, even though our empire is dying, we're hell-bent on pretending that it's still alive. It's just very weird. How do you folks look, I ask a lot of Canadians to call in, how do you look at the United States right now in terms of,
I know a lot of stuff has come out recently about our prime minister deciding we're going to go to war in Afghanistan because even with CSIS having you guys penetrated to a fare thee well, and I mean that in the most literal sense, our intelligence service knows everything you do. If you ever want to know about 9/11, ask a CSIS agent.
Yeah.
They were scared about which way you guys would jump if we said no to both of the wars. They said no to Iraq because they just couldn't justify it under their political circumstances. But they wanted to say no to Afghanistan, but they knew enough about what was going on in your White House to be physically intimidated into thinking, what will they do if we say no to both of these?
What would they have done? What would the Bush administration have done?
Well, we are kind of dependent on you for trade. You're dependent on us, too. We're in a mutual
Canada and the United States. Well, Canada is the U.S.'s biggest trading partner, I believe. I know
we are ours and we are yours. And
we get most of our oil from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So
not just that, but food and resources and lumber.
Well,
and
it seems like Canadians would have had more leverage then. If the White House under Bush would have gotten a little bit froggy, the Canadians could have. It seems to me the Canadians could have said, "Hey, what was that?"
That was my little one deciding that she really wants to eat it.
Oh, I thought it was a ghost or something. You've got a baby. You have a baby there, a little girl.
Little girl.
And
Tesla.
How old is Tesla? After the radio guy?
Lord Nikola Tesla, the Slovak, I believe.
Yeah, well, how old is she?
About 14 months now.
Oh, my goodness.
Just learning how to walk.
Yeah?
Something terrifying, really.
And what's she doing up at, well, I guess it's early there. It's only, what, about 9 o'clock where you are?
Getting close to 9. This is her bedtime. So
yeah.
Peter, and then we just put her to bed after this.
Well, anyway, it was good talking to you, Chris. Check in again sometime from Vancouver Island, all right?
We will.
All right.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you.
Good work.
Take care. That was scary. I'm talking to the guy, and all of a sudden I hear that noise, and I thought we have a haint stuck in the office here in the studio. Thanks, Chris. Okay, Malachi in Saskatoon has sent something in here, but I don't have time to read it on the air. I'll take a look at it and do it when we come back tomorrow. Valentine's music tomorrow? Oh, my goodness. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.